Like I didn't exist. And he was, you know, very, very good at what he did. And we had lots of opportunities where we worked together extremely well. But there were moments, of course, that not so well. And I remember times that he would refer to me as his secretary, and nothing would send me off more than calling me a secretary. And I had a difficult time at times with that balance, because he would want to take, you know, he was trying to find a place to think of, you know, being a business person in a business with a spouse, wanting to have some levity and you know, affection in it. But I was like, either or, like, you know, when we're in business together, as far as I'm concerned, we're not married. And so when we would go onto sites or, you know, meet customers and this sort of thing, and especially in the beginning, because I did a lot of, because like I said, it wasn't my field. And so I learned a lot on field in conjunction with him. And what was interesting out of it too, is he taught me a lot of the procedures and protocols for certain types of inspections and testing that we would do. And I was all about questions. And I learned a lot from all sorts of different resources and things. And then I started questioning some of his protocols. And I was just like, yeah, but I thought you were supposed to do it this way. Well, but I thought you were supposed to do it this way. And so that became a bit of a rub between us. So when we were on site, whether it was just an initial consultation with a client, I was very adamant about not introducing myself as his spouse. I was my own individual person. I didn't use the same last name. And it caused a lot of conflict between us because if it ever did come across, and sometimes, let's say that we were outside doing an inspection, I don't want to hear him calling me, oh, honey, could you go to the vehicle and could you get this instrument? Don't call me honey. I'm not your honey. I'm at work. I'm in a business. I have a position. I'm a consultant. This is what I'm doing. So my concern was always about that being overheard by a customer, because to me, it was very unprofessional and it took away from the credibility, not only of myself, but of him and the business. And I really wanted to represent a very powerful, professional, you know, business and operate from that place. So I have had that experience of, and then if a customer, even a potential customer, would have heard that, then they treated us differently. They treated us differently as individuals. They treated us different. It's almost just like, oh, wow, you're just, it's like you're the neighbor coming over for tea, you know, sort of thing. So definitely I have experienced some different biases. And what's interesting too, as I thought on some of these questions that you posed to us, I recall him very clearly saying that, and I watched him do it, that depending on the consultation we went to, he had figured out that if he wore glasses, that people would treat him differently than if he didn't wear glasses. So if he went into a visit like that we had set up, and I had set up as a consultation to review whatever we were going to review, depending on his prior knowledge of who we were going to go and see and what the conversation was going to be about, he would wear glasses because it would increase his confidence and his ability to believe. So even if he was like kind of, you know, talking out the side of his mouth and was not really knowing what he was talking about, wearing the glasses just gave him that little extra sense of authority, right? So it's really interesting to think back on some of those different dynamics and in terms of bias. So, yeah.
I've experienced some of those, and, you know, some of now it's like with humor, but then what ways, we talked about with Women's History Month, breaking the bias, what ways can we encourage other people who either may be new as entrepreneurs, new in that situation, what things can we encourage them to do to break that particular way that other people might stereotypically treat them?
I think partly one idea would be to do some research on it and get some ideas of how subtle some of those experiences can be and how they show up. and what other people have experienced, because it seems to, I think in my experience in different parts of my life, sometimes something has occurred, something has happened, and it hasn't settled well with me in the moment, but I haven't necessarily had the awareness to really understand what just happened. And I'm a person that takes time to process things. And so there could be subtle things occurring that you're not really aware of. And bias can show up in so many different ways and respects without even being aware of it. And from a personal development / spiritual aspect of things, for women, for men, for everybody, but perhaps we're focusing on women in particular, I think the more you get to really do your inner work to know who you are and trust who you are and build that confidence and explore past experiences of your life. And if you're focusing on personal development, if you're focusing on career building, if you're focusing on being an entrepreneur, there are so many amazing resources in terms of books, online physical books, coaches like Deborah is, and coaches that Deborah would have as her coach, to really guide us to think, okay, this is an idea, like Deborah said, this is an idea I have. How can I explore it? How can I get support on it? Has it been done before? And then, like you say, that does it feel like the more confident we are in ourselves, the more we are aware of those little triggers that come up that we may not process in the moment, because if it's not feeling in flow, like if you get that little gut reaction, something's out of whack. And so I think it's a process. I know, and the younger you can start, I think the better. I think the better, you know, just to continue to become strong, independent, really confident women that can go and explore and do all sorts, because anything is possible, right? Anything is possible.
Dr. Ramona, you've had an experience in visiting students, or even as you're here, things that maybe family members might have thought, you're retired, but the difference in perception that I think you mentioned at one time, students that you taught at one point when you were younger, the perception they had when they saw you older visiting for a recognition.
Yeah, it was, I had this wonderful experience where some of my students whom I taught maybe around 35 years ago, they kind of decided to have a meeting with the teachers, and I completely changed from who I was when I taught them. So I was Miss Lobo, and I had this different attire and hairstyle. And when I got married, that changed completely. I grew long hair and I had a plait and a dot and I wore the sari. And so they would never recognize me. And I didn't keep in touch. So they had to, you know, to take a lot of effort to find out where I was. And I don't know how they found. And then they invited me and they made me come to this very glamorous house where they lived. And then they made all these kinds of comments about how I looked and, you know, what was I doing all those years. And it was great seeing them, because they were, they belonged to various important business houses in India. You may not be familiar with these names that I'm going to mention right now, but they were, say, Birlas, the Hindujas, the Mittals. So their fathers originally had these very big businesses to do with textiles or steel or construction. And then they inherited those businesses. So when I met them now, after those 35 years, they were in their 40s. And so it was really great to see them and wonderful to know how much they remembered about me and what I taught them. And so I feel that it's a very rewarding experience to be a teacher and to have so much of influence, positive influence on the values of the future generation. So that's what I'd like to say about my experiences.
I found that, you know, when, as Nancy mentioned, getting angry, I don't really have a temper. But I grew up with out in our neighborhood, it was all boys. I mean, it was three girls and maybe 30 boys. And my oldest cousin, who was two years older than me, that was my ticket to go anywhere. And he would tell me certain things, you know, don't cry, don't do this. And he was a protector because if anywhere I went, they know this is Jimmy's cousin. However, and how to fight. I had an experience, like some people have as children, being run home from school. And, you know, these girls were going to beat me up because there was another girl that they didn't like and I was befriending her. Well, I went to the boys in my neighborhood and I said, can you teach me how to fight? And when they taught me how to fight, you know, I never had another fight from fifth grade through graduation. But I also, you know, there's some things that I don't take lightly, and I have to speak to the Charlotte that would want to leave my handprint on their face. And I was at a conference working as public health officer, information person at a conference. I went to a conference in another province, and I went in the bathroom, and these women were in there, and they asked me something about the toilet paper. Where was the toilet paper cup? And I thought, I have on a suit. They just assume because I'm Black that I know about the toilet paper. And I really had to, as Deborah Thorne teaches people to do, breathe and say in my professional voice, I'm sorry, I have no idea where the toilet paper is. I am one of the speakers. And then they looked embarrassed. But I think we do have a responsibility to have people recognize us in the roles that we're in. I've had the experience also of being a dietitian, going to a conference with the chef for an entity place. And you know how food companies have these things where they show you all the new products. And my badge said buyer. His said chef. But as we were talking to some people, they were turning. It's like, do I not have a voice? Do they not see me? Because all of the purchase things they were directing to him. And so I thought, there's a way to treat people, teach people how not to treat you like that. Everybody that treated me like that, I left their paper and I said, well, you know, we'll get back to you. But I didn't. And I thought maybe they'll think, why didn't they get back to her? Maybe it's because the way we treated that woman. And I've had opportunities. We encourage people taking part in this to speak up. The show, that radio show that this will be heard on tomorrow, is called Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon What You've Heard. All of us as knowledge bearers and people who are retired from different areas, we have a responsibility to command respect without being nasty. Don't have to scream, yell, shake your head all around, bang on tables and throw things over the floor. But sometimes just saying with authority, excuse me, you know, I'm here as a representative of whoever, or excuse me, my business is I'm the author of From the Other Side. I was here first, or I'm trying to explain to you what my book is about. And so as we do that, it also teaches other people who are watching that we are people to be reckoned with, that our age is a reservoir of knowledge, skills, et cetera.
Okay, I wanted to jump in a little bit here because when Nancy was talking, she was speaking of what we call now microaggressions, you know, the little bitty things that happen that people say. And we're built with a wonderful system. It hits you in your gut when it doesn't feel right. You know, when it doesn't feel right, you may not have processed the proper way to handle it or what it is, but you felt something was amiss. And what I want to encourage us to do is to speak up. You know, I wrote an article, to be silent is to be complicit. So if I don't speak up, I'm adding to the problem. Now, it can be as simple as saying, you know, something about what you said just didn't sit well with me. I don't have the full answer right now, but I will get back to you because that didn't feel good. I have to let you know that you don't get to talk to me any kind of way and that I can do it in a dignified manner. you know, using all of my best conflict resolution skills, which does start, you're right, Charlotte, with breathing. Let me breathe first so that I can come across as poised as I possibly can. And I can simply say, you know, there's something about that that doesn't feel good. I don't have the exact information yet, but I will get back to you because it's not too late.
Yeah, that's true too, but it takes a while.
It's because, okay.
Yeah, and because you're new in the country, for example, that you want to be friendly, that you don't want to misinterpret people, and then you don't want them to think that you're belligerent. I've been called belligerent because...
Because you're supposed to stand up for yourself. I know. Take a look at me. I'm the angry Black woman. It's okay. But you know what? Sometimes you need an angry Black woman in the room, okay? You know, if you'll allow me, I will share with you. I will tell you I need to process this. I need to think. But if you think while we're doing this, you can walk over me, no, you get to see the other side. And then it's like, oh my goodness, well, I didn't mean to offend you. Clearly you did when I told you. And I had this happen recently. I was in a meeting about business and somehow they got on health and they got on weight. And as everyone can see, I am a large woman. And the conversation was, well, people are large just because all they got to do is stop eating and they won't be. And I said, you know, I'm going to ask you to change the conversation because some of us are addicted. You know, food is an addiction and it's the only addiction that you have to touch. If you're a drug addict or you smoke cigarettes or you're an alcoholic, you don't ever have to touch those substances again in life. But those of us who have challenges with food must touch that substance every single day. So can we now switch the conversation? Oh, we didn't mean to offend you. And no, I'm not offended, but we're going to switch the conversation. Well, all I said was I heard what you said. We will change the conversation. And then I let it go quiet. And of course, the conversation changed. Okay. So that's what I'm saying. There are ways, those are, you know, in conflict resolution, we call it sitting in the silence. Silence is a vacuum. And it wants to, people want to fix it. Nope. Create something that makes everybody silent and just let it be silent. That speaks louder than any yelling and screaming we can do. But every time we don't address something, a microaggression, it builds on, like you said, well, yeah, next time I'll see it sooner. Yes, you will. But it's dug you down a little bit deeper because that stuff does stick. You know, sticks and stones may break your bones and words hurt too. Okay. So yes, you are being harmed by words. So my thing is, you know, people have to understand how best to treat me and I can teach you how to treat me. You don't say anything that comes through your head, out your mouth to me. It won't end well. And so, you know, I'll say to people, you might not want to talk to me like that.
Yes.
Because I'm part of Charlotte's crew. We act ugly if need be.
That connects to something that we have been doing each week. We have poems and we have stories. Neil has written more poems than anyone in our, this is what, our 97th. This is the 98th, Leslie is our historian.
97.
And we're working toward 100. But a good number of those 97 episodes, Neil has had a poem of the week. And poetry is one of the other ways that people can discharge emotions. You're able to not directly talk to someone, but when they read the poem, they can see and feel themselves in it. So he has written a poem related to what's happening in Ukraine, and we're going to have him share that now. And to just know, that's another thing. Sometimes you don't have to immediately address something. You can sit or write a poem or write a story about it. And in getting it out to the world, it helps people to think about how they're treating people. Okay, Neil?
Yes, thank you. One of the tools that I've used for years and years is to write myself a letter about what I feel about circumstances, what I feel about experiences. So you don't have to send the letter, you've written it. But I was a management consultant and I did a lot of work, and I flew to London, England with a client, and during part of our negotiations with a contract. I took a walk up the street, and we were in Portsmouth, England, and there was a church that had been damaged, but they didn't fix the damage. They just cleaned up the mess, and I stood in front of a church, and here's my poem. It's called "The Church with No Roof." A boy stood at the doorway to the church with no roof. It also had no windows. It also had no doors. The walls still stood, but between them lay the rubble. Just yesterday, it was a whole church with a roof and windows and doors. He had walked by here yesterday on his way to school, as he does every day on his way to school. Just yesterday, it was a whole church with a roof and windows and doors. Just yesterday, his world was a whole world with a roof and windows and doors. Just yesterday, he had a father. Proudly, he marched alongside. As soldiers, two by two, passed the church and boarded their train to fate. But this day is different, for the church has no roof, and he no longer has the secure knowing of where his father is. Just yesterday, his pride was whole, with a roof and windows and doors. Mom says we are safe in the underground, but I feel mother's fear, the fear that teaches me to be afraid of those I know not. The confusion of emotion inside for love for some and vengeful rage at others. He dare not think that they hate him so and wish his father dead. Just yesterday, his emotions were whole, with a roof and windows and doors. He has a place inside where he hides all the fear-filled feelings, the uncertainty of existence must not show. He dare not think, why do the others hate us so? Just yesterday, his love was whole, with a roof and windows and doors. His fleeting thoughts, I don't want my dad to be dead like my mate's dad. I don't want the bombs to hurt my mom. I need to protect her. There is only one mother and one father allowed per family. All the rest are strangers. I am afraid. Just yesterday, his family was whole, with a roof and windows and doors. Just yesterday, his world was whole, and his house had a roof and windows and doors to keep out the dampness and the cold. Just yesterday, he had a mom and dad to holiday with and be safe. But today brings the knowledge his world has been bombed. Just yesterday, his world was whole, with a roof and windows and doors. It is the same world, but his view has been shifted. This child's soul has been hurt. The world is now an unsafe place, a place where bombs are dropped with the intention of killing and destroying. Just yesterday, this church was whole, with a roof and windows and doors. For a moment, I was that boy as I stood before the entrance to the church in Portsmouth, England. The entrance to the church with no roof and no windows and no doors. Thinking of the child who stood in this experience of learning, when just yesterday this church was whole, with a window and roof and doors. Stand in front of any church or temple or mosque and imagine it with no roof and no windows and no doors. Imagine a boy in any nation, in any culture, in any language, standing there when just yesterday for them, his or her world was whole with a roof and windows and doors. End of poem.
Wow, Neil, that brought back a lot of memories. I don't know if you know, but I grew up in South London. I was born in the late 1940s. And I played in bombed out houses. And my mother-in-law went through the Blitz and was traumatized so much that living in Canada 20 years later, when there was a thunderstorm, she thought it was the bombs coming and would go and hide under the bed. And, you know, it stays with you. You know, the damage that's done to not just the physical damage, but the emotional damage, you know, the trauma that those people that survive are going to carry with them.
I think that's the message of this poem. Mm-hmm. Is we have hurt the children in Ukraine that will hate Russians forever, and they will fear forever.
Such is the
Thank
case.
You. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you, Neil. You know, women, this is Women's Month, but Mother's Day, it was interesting to find out some years ago that it came about through a mother writing the president asking just for a cessation of the war, and that women, as bearers of children for a great percentage of their lives, women are the people that are spending lots of time with children, who put their faces in their on their shoulders to be petted and to be comforted. And so the outrage that a number of people have had at the thought of this child that they've born being ordered to go to war or being caught up in war has led to a lot of support for movements to make the world a more peaceful place. So I hope that that poem will also contribute to making the world a more peaceful place where there aren't more children looking at where they used to go to church or where they used to live or having nightmares when they hear a loud sound outside. So I thank you for coming today. And thank you for Deborah for sharing the encouragement, the information about the Information Diva, how people can learn how they can do a book, do their own book for $2.65. There are a few more costs that go into it, but the net is you don't have to pay $1,200 in order to get a book printed. And Nancy, thank you for telling us about your happiest place. How can people reach you?
The best way to reach me is to, what you said first, email me. So you'd email me at theinformationdivaonline@gmail.com. Or you can go to theinformationdiva.com and find information about me there.
Okay, Nancy?
Oh, if you're looking for a pet sitter, dog walker, it's happiestpupetservices.ca.
Without further ado, I'll say thank you and goodbye to you. I look forward to seeing you again next Thursday at 1 p.m. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C. Thank you for spending time with me and the guests that we had on Powered by Age talking about breaking the bias for women entrepreneurs and involving, engaging yourself and learning what things that you say might be a little bit insulting to others. And if you are a woman who's experienced a bias, being a mentor and encouraging other women to not just give up, but to keep going. I'm Charlotte Farrell. Look forward to hearing you and seeing you again next week at 10. And, you know, whenever people ask me what time it is, I say it's always love time, poem time. Love time, poem time.